Highbridge, a division of Recorded Books, presents Welcoming Your Puppy from Planet Dog, How to Go Beyond Training and Raise Your Best Friend by Kathy Callahan. Read by Kathy Callahan. Introduction. You kidnapped your puppy from another planet. What if this is a mistake? This secret thought, unutterable even to family members, keeps more than a few new puppy owners up at night. They tell me, sometimes in a whisper, that they must be missing something. Getting a puppy was supposed to be fun, but all they feel is stress, frustration, even anger. They seek me out for the magic answers, the training tips that will bring peace. They're at their wits' end with the biting, the peeing, and the destruction. They get out their notebooks, ready to record expert information personalized for their situation. I absolutely have those tips and tricks, strategies, and game plans. Here's the problem. They're not going to work without the right mindset. There's actually just one thing I want new owners to write down in that notebook so that they can make it a part of every interaction they have with their puppy. This is a baby that I kidnapped from another planet. The way to enjoy puppyhood and emerge from it with a beautiful two-way friendship is to get in the right headspace. A real live puppy is not going to fit neatly into your regular pre-puppy life, and trying to make it so is a recipe for constant angst. The happiest puppy people are the ones who dive into this phase and backburner their other things. If you need a convincing reason to do that because it feels wrong to prioritize a little ball of fluff, try this. Just a baby, kidnapped from another planet, far away from its own kind, its own customs. Lead with the empathy this idea demands, and you'll find your groove. When you adjust your expectations for this little puppy to where they should be, suddenly training is simple. Not easy, but simple. Frustration blocks problem solving. The poor baby bit may sound ridiculous to you if you have a new puppy contentedly snoring away in your lap. After all, this pup is lucky to have landed with you. Not only is there plenty of food, but there's an expensive dog bed and an overflowing toy basket. More importantly, you have turned your whole dang life upside down for this dog. It seems like all you do is deal with the puppy. All true. But the more relevant truth is this. Before you took him home, that 8-week-old puppy spent every single moment of his little life in a cozy, warm scrum with his own tribe. He was cheerily hanging out with his family, doing everything that comes naturally, wrestling, biting, sniffing, chewing, and jumping. He was never alone. He had no idea you were going to swoop in, kidnap him, take him to a new planet, and, here's the kicker, suddenly be mad at him for every behavior that is prized in his culture. Let that sink in. Take your time. Aw, shucks, now you feel sad, and you want to know what good it does to ponder this depressing thought. After all, this is how it has to go. In our modern society, puppies don't live on Planet Dog forever. But forcing yourself to rest in this concept increases your empathy for the puppy in front of you. If your mind is focused on your own disappointments, pee on the carpet again, more chewed shoes, it leads to negative interactions with your puppy that can only hinder progress. If instead your mind is filled to the brim with how your puppy must be feeling, confused, lonely, your own anger evaporates. You know what that makes room for? Effective problem solving. Oddly enough, the magic answer to all of puppyhood is empathy, not some fancy dog trainer technique. Plain old empathy. I promise it'll make you a happier throughout puppyhood and help you become a dramatically better teacher for your puppy. Here's a glimpse of what it looks like to approach a handful of the most common puppyhood challenges using Planet Dog empathy. Biting on Planet Dog. On Planet Dog, everyone in polite society explores new things by mouth. Given the absence of hands, it's the most effective, most satisfying way to engage. Puppies in particular use their mouths to play with their friends and to investigate the world around them. P People who aren't thinking about their puppy's natural planet dog culture are alarmed by this mouthiness. They feel they may have picked the wrong one. The kids cry, "I don't like her, she's biting me." The humans put the pup in the crate for yet another hour thinking, "That'll teach her." It doesn't need to be this way. Owners who are operating out of planet dog empathy will wake up in the morning to a bitey pup, and their first thought will be, "Oh, you're missing playing with your friends the way you used to. You're trying to play with us that way." The thinking cap goes on and the mind is open. As your pup's only guide to planet human, how can you help this dear toddler who's trying her best to navigate a challenging transition? Suddenly, the answers are obvious. So often, particularly regarding mouthiness, people tell me their puppy just doesn't understand the word no. My answer is that when you set up your puppy's day to match her needs, you'll barely need to use that word. Saying no a lot means you may have forgotten that you, say it with me, kidnapped a baby from another planet. Having taken that dramatic action, it's only right to do everything you can to help her adjust. Aloneness on Planet Dog. On Planet Dog, puppies are virtually never alone. From the moment they are born, they're surrounded by littermates and within a leap or two of their mom. That makes for constant companionship, fun, exercise, and warmth. Once brought to planet human, a puppy might spend the vast majority of his time alone in a cold crate and an empty kitchen. When this toddler naturally cries out for companionship, he is yelled at by the human who is his sole connection in this new life. "He needs to learn. He already had a walk around the block, plus I just played with him for a while. Now I'm busy." There's a better way. Leading with empathy makes us realize that while eventually this baby needs to learn to hang out alone, shock treatment is not the most effective learning experience. Furthermore, it can easily have the unintended consequence of making it even scarier to be alone. Once inside your puppy's head, you'll gravitate toward a stair-step approach to help him learn to feel content while alone. As our little alien gets used to life with humans over the first weeks, aided by planet dog-oriented approaches, pretty soon, puppy is happily enjoying his own company for reasonable stretches of the day that can get longer every week. The leash on Planet Dog. On Planet Dog, there are no leashes. Imagine a recently kidnapped puppy's terror when a strange thing is tightened around her neck and suddenly she's pulled around by it. Even worse, she is dragged outside into a world she's never seen before, with loud noises and other creatures that are utterly foreign. So many new owners are mystified when this pup is reluctant. They just pull her along, thinking, "She's so weird. All dogs like walks. I'm sure she'll get used to it." And generally, she does, but only after experiencing a lot of fear and losing trust in her human. In contrast, the owner who remembers the key information, "just a baby," will consider how terrifying this could be, which opens up the mind. How could this walk be made less frightening? Ideas abound. Within days, this pup raised in empathy is happily walking on leash up and down the street with her trusted owner, who feels all the closer to her pup for the journey they've just taken. The other type of owner, who was in a rush to get these walks going, is still dealing with a skittish walker weeks later. Tinkling on Planet Dog. The challenge of potty training is the primary source of the sleepless, "what have I done?" nights many new owners experience. Even the most committed humans seem to buckle at the 3-week mark and confess to yelling. Alas, our little kidnapped baby may have just learned from that angry shout that her person is unpredictable. As she tries her best to figure out planet human, she may also have concluded in that moment, "I better hide from a human if I need to pee, maybe here, behind the couch." Or, "I don't ever want to pee in front of a human, so I won't pee on leash anymore." Or, "Right before my person yelled, I was looking at the small child, so that must be a bad thing on this planet. I will run from small children now." Our human potty training rules make very little sense to those from Planet Dog. While it is obvious to you that the dining room carpet is no place to relieve yourself, to your puppy, it seems ideal. It's away from the prime living space, and it's got nice absorption plus traction. Start with empathy. Understand that your pup has drastically different instincts from yours and set him up for success. There are no shortcuts. I'd sugarcoat it for you, but that doesn't do you any good in the long run. The kindest thing I can do is give you the truth. After a few days of adjusting, every accident is the human's fault. The upside? That means the process is under your control. The dream is within reach. Frustrated new puppy owners think they're not asking much. Sheesh, I just want to hang out with him and cuddle. But that's not actually true. We're also asking our puppies not to bark, jump, bite, pee, sniff, or chew. Sometimes it's as if we're asking them not to be dogs. It is frankly amazing to me how well most puppies do during this shocking transition from one planet to another. They are so adaptable that even when shoehorned immediately into a human's world of repeated no's, they often do okay. But in the homes where Planet Dog empathy rules from day one, those are the homes where the whole puppyhood thing looks just like it does in the storybooks. Sure, some human priorities were moved to the back burner for 6 months. But there was no tossing and turning. There were no secret thoughts of regret. These are the folks who wonder what they did before they got this new friend. They are also, by the way, the people whose dog is walking at a relaxed pace beside them, on a loose leash, gazing up at them from time to time, wondering what happy adventure might be coming next. Part 1. Nesting. Chapter 1. Your mindset. Choose to love this moment. It's the first day. That tiny, miraculous ball of fur is curled up, sound asleep, in your lap. Your people are gathered round. You didn't know your home could feel this cozy. You're whispering and grinning at each other. Nobody's looking at a screen. Nobody's even thinking about leaving the room. Welcome to puppyhood. There are some moments in life that live up to the hype, and the first nap is one of them. There will be people who tell you you're nuts to have done this. Lots of them. They'll tell you they did puppyhood once and vowed never, ever again. They'll tell you you'll be trapped at home, your life will no longer be your own, and your stuff will be destroyed. They're not entirely wrong. Puppyhood is intense. There's no such thing as just adding a puppy into the mix and carrying on. Life as you know it is over for now. You're suddenly going to be aware of just how much free time you used to have, and you'll reminisce about how luxurious it was to be able to just leave things out around the house. And yet, there was a reason you reached for puppyhood. Yes, it is the giant disruption the naysayers describe. But who says that's necessarily a bad thing? For some of us, and this is my fondest hope for you, it turns out that once you temporarily back burner part of your life to make way for this puppy, your front burner starts to overflow with things that bring happier days, a more relaxed psyche, and a more hopeful window on the world. One of the unexpected outcomes of puppyhood can be a permanent rearrangement of the burners. As you embark on this adventure, know that the very same puppy in the very same household can create two extremes of experience for a human. The difference is in your own mindset. You can choose to take a deep breath, be ready, and love this moment. Chapter 2. Your village. Build it beforehand. At some point in the first month of puppyhood, there's going to be something that feels like an emergency. Maybe you think the puppy may have eaten a rock, but you're not sure. Or she's terrified of the leash, but that's the only way you can take her outside to pee. Or you need to leave town for the weekend because your mom just broke her ankle. When that moment comes, who are you going to call? Having a great village really helps when you're raising a puppy. Yours will grow organically over time, but it's smart to start putting together your team even before the puppy comes home. Let's build your village. The vet. Many folks are surprised when they call the vet to arrange their puppy's first visit, only to find there's a 2-week wait for new appointments. Darn it, that third puppy shot is due tomorrow. They hurriedly call around and end up at the first vet who has an open slot. That's not the ideal way to pick the person who's going to guide you for a dozen years and the healthcare of this new little family member. Instead, talk to local friends before you get your puppy. Which vet do the best dog people around you go to and why? In larger practices, there may be one vet everybody adores, another who's brand new, and another who's hard to talk to. It took me years to realize that I should ask for my favorite vet every time I made an appointment. It's so valuable to build a relationship of trust and communication over the years. If you switch around every time, you'll never get there. Remember, you'll also need an emergency vet who's open 24/7. You may never actually have to use them, but if that 3 a.m. emergency comes, you don't want to be wondering where to go. Put that phone number on your fridge. Always try to call first or on the way when you have to take your dog in. A last word on vet selection. I caution you about using cost as your key differentiator. Is that because I'm an out-of-touch billionaire? Ha! Nope! It's because the apples-to-apples costs are typically very similar. And when they're not, it's often because a clinic is offering something extra I want once I know what it is. A vet with a reputation for being too expensive may have more sophisticated diagnostic equipment right in the office, or might be trained in newer, more effective treatment options. Maybe they insist on higher qualifications for their nurses and techs, which you might not notice but will result in better care. Perhaps the clinic has spent the time and money to train all staff in fear-free techniques, which will help your dog feel more relaxed in that back room. To my mind, those vets aren't really more expensive. They're actually offering a better experience for me and my dog. It might even be cheaper in the long run. For example, you can treat some ear infections with a medication the vet basically paints onto the ear one time versus the cheaper option of you cleaning your dog's painful ear and administering meds twice a day, which is more difficult to do well and may necessitate a follow-up appointment. My point is this. Empower yourself by asking good questions. Vets have no idea how much an individual owner knows or doesn't know. If you're not sure why an expensive option is recommended, ask for more information. Listen to answers about whether there's a less expensive alternative and what the downsides to that would be. Open up that communication channel so that you can head out the door understanding exactly why you and your vet chose that treatment path. Great veterinary care is important, and it will feel expensive if you haven't planned appropriately for it. Opting for pet insurance is often a smart decision. The trainer. When you have your first question about your puppy's behavior, you'll be tempted to Google it. If you do, you'll get conflicting answers from, quote, experts, unquote. Some of the advice out there is great. And some is so damaging that my stomach twists whenever a new client says, well, I looked up what to do about the barking on the internet, and they said. Instead of typing that question into the search bar and looking at random hits, find a few trusted sources ahead of time and turn to them whenever you have questions. Get a book by a force-free trainer who teaches a positive, relationship-based approach rather than one rooted in dominance and corrections. Oh, wait, you already did. Great job. Get a second one because two excellent training voices are better than one. The Classic Puppy Primer by Patricia McConnell and Brenda Skidmore is a fantastic choice that offers an easy-to-follow, week-by-week training plan. Research local trainers. Look for official credentials like CPDT, KPA, or PMCT that offer evidence of experience and expertise. An FDM, Family Dog Mediator, designation is a great sign, too. Remember that this industry is unregulated and absolutely anyone can call themselves a dog trainer. Super important, if someone is promising a quick fix and a perfect puppy, run. Once you've chosen a trainer, arrange for an at-home visit during the first 2 weeks after your pup comes home. You're going to have a million questions, and having somebody look at your setup and get you on the right road quickly is incredibly helpful. A Zoom consultation is a close second. I'd say that 85% of the time, we trainers get the first call from a client when a puppy is 8 months old, and there are suddenly a lot of issues. If those folks had struck up a relationship with the trainer at the beginning, they'd have been able to skip some challenges. Well-run, safe puppy classes can be wonderful. If you can walk by and observe a class with the instructor beforehand, do it. The vibe should be fun preschool, not military academy. Look for lots of treat pouches. The neighbors. The first months of caring for a puppy can make you feel trapped at home. Each social invitation prompts a calculation about just how long you feel you can be away from the puppy at this stage. Before accepting your fate as a prisoner, consider whether there might be a happy solution right up your street. Puppies benefit enormously from interacting with lots of nice humans, and humans benefit tremendously from a dose of puppy joy. Is there a teenager in the neighborhood who'd love to come over every day at a certain time to play with the puppy out in the yard? How about an elderly neighbor who might enjoy puppy contact? Maybe a homeschooling family one street over would like to work puppy visits into a unit on animal care. It can feel intimidating and a little awkward to seek out this kind of arrangement. Then there's the question of whether you should offer to pay. The answer is yes, even if they try to refuse to accept it. This kind of money is a drop in the bucket of lifetime dog expenses and the goodwill that results from making helpers feel appreciated rather than taken for granted is gigantic. So, give visits from neighbors a try, even if it's just for the first 2 weeks when the pup is neediest. You may find that nobody wants it to end, and you'll have neighbors offering to pet sit their favorite doggy whenever you go away. Pet sitters and kennels. Who's the most beloved pet sitter in your area? Don't know? Find out. Even if you don't plan to travel in the first few months, an emergency may come up. If it does, you may be dismayed to find that you're out of luck at boarding kennels because your pup isn't old enough to have had all her distemper parvovirus shots and is therefore at risk of infection. Or you thought your puppy didn't need the Bordetella kennel cough shot, but the kennel requires it 10 days before boarding and now it's too late. Or your pup is 7 months old and not yet spayed because the vet advised waiting until after her first heat, which means the kennel can't take her. When people face this last-minute dilemma, they often turn to Rover.com or a more local pet-sitting service to find somebody who will come and stay at their home. That can be just fine, but it can also feel very uncomfortable to hand over your keys to a complete stranger as you head out the door. It feels much better to have compiled a list of pet-sitters that folks in your area trust. Puppies are darling, but they're hard work. Be prepared to pay for great care. Chapter 3. Your setup. Create a puppy apartment. Want your puppy to seem brilliant? Limit her choices by providing a well-designed puppy space. She'll stun you with how good she is. Every now and then, our adopters just rave about the super smart foster puppy they just picked up from us. Oh my gosh, I think she was potty trained in a day. Seriously, she's never chewed the furniture. I'm delighted, and I ask them to show me their setup. Inevitably, I see a wonderful little puppy apartment within the main living area. Bingo! Great job! Creating the right initial space for your pup can save your sanity, save your stuff, save on emergency vet bills, and save your puppy's learning experience by limiting her ability to make mistakes. Whatever you do, do not let a new puppy have the run of the house. None of us has the bandwidth to supervise every single second. So, if a puppy is given a whole house pass, inevitably there are tinkles that teach the puppy it's fine to pee inside, sofa chewing episodes that teach the pup that it's a really satisfying activity, and the swallowing of an unmentionable item from the bathroom trash that necessitates a scary trip to the vet. All completely unnecessary. Just create a puppy apartment. What exactly it looks like, how long you use it, and how it expands over time will vary, but the bottom line is that you need to limit the puppy's space. The wonderful animal behaviorist Kathy Sadeo would call this an instance of being a choice architect for your dog, helping your pup practice making good choices because you haven't put any bad ones on the table. Think small and central. Your puppy apartment will be a puppy-proofed space in the main living area that ideally has 1. You hanging out in it or near it a lot. 2. Easy access to the puppy's outdoor bathroom area. And 3. No carpet. This might be your whole kitchen or perhaps a portion of your family room with the rugs rolled up. It is absolutely not an isolated bedroom, basement, or laundry room. The puppy needs to be with people. First of all, she misses her litter mates. In addition to meeting her need for company, having her in the middle of things allows her to learn and to get used to the sights, sounds, and smells of planet human. Right now, she's like a sponge in her ability to soak up new information. Let's put her where there are good things to absorb. Equipment. You'll likely need to use gates or linkable exercise pens to build your puppy apartment. Sure, that equipment is ugly, but so is your mood when your carpet is ruined and your new shoes destroyed. Keep in mind, this phase will pass. One day, your home can return to its former aesthetic glory. For now, your priority is setting your puppy up for success. Next comes a crate, soft bedding, food and water bowls, and toys, toys, toys. Think about borrowing some of these items before getting drawn in by all the products that would be calling your name once you start searching online. Your needs will evolve quickly as the puppy grows. The setup that's ideal for a 9-week-old pup may be knocked down or jumped over by that same pup 2 weeks later. So, don't get too heavily invested, either emotionally or financially, but limit the pup space for at least the first few weeks and probably months. I'm often asked about puppy pee pads. Believe me, I understand the appeal. But by the time your pup comes home with you at 8 weeks or older, he's ready to learn to potty outside. If you put down scented pads that actually encourage peeing indoors, you're setting back your puppy's learning. Instead of inadvertently teaching your puppy to pee on the floor, put your effort into making darn sure your puppy is outside often enough that your floors stay clean. Access to the outdoors. A lightning-fast route to the outdoor potty area is a giant bonus for a puppy apartment, because that trip is going to happen every half hour at first. The longer the trek to the door, the more likely there'll be an accident along the way. The easier you make this process on yourself, the more likely you'll do it right, which is what makes the difference between a puppy who's potty trained quickly and one who takes forever. As long as we're on the subject, if it is in any way possible for you, a fenced yard is a dream during the potty training weeks. Eliminating the extra hassle of putting on a harness and a leash with a puppy who's used to neither is life-changing. A physical fence also facilitates great free play and natural exploration, in addition to allowing doggy playdates. It's okay if you're in an apartment or renting with zero ability to alter the yard. You'll make do. But if you can build a fence, don't postpone the decision. "We'll get it later if we need it," some puppy owners tell me. That's when I start to beg and plead. Nobody ever regrets fencing the yard for a dog. Instead, I often hear, "Ugh, I can't imagine how much harder puppyhood would have been without this fence." If a fence truly isn't in the cards, think about setting up a temporary one using options from your local home improvement store. They have everything from ugly orange snow fencing to pretty wrought iron style offerings. For a while at least, your pup is going to be small enough that this kind of temporary enclosure will keep her safe and it will make your potty training experience 1,000 times easier. Part 2, The First Week. Chapter 4, The First Day. Keep it simple. For most puppy parents-to-be, some daydreaming takes place as the big day approaches. Folks tend to spend time imagining the smiles on their kids' faces. Should we make a TikTok, honey? Or planning to have the neighbors over for pizza to celebrate.
Sample complete. Ready to continue?